Blog Talk Radio.
There you go, and good morning, and welcome into another Sunday here at the Fred House Sports Garage. Fred House, Mike, coming to you here for another hour or so, a little bit more than that, where we're going to be sitting around just talking motorsports as we're heading into week three here now in the NASCAR season. 2 weeks down, two races already in the books. And one of the things I come away from it after just 2 weeks is, yeah, I guess the Fords are for real. You take a look at what happened last week in Atlanta. And Brad Keselowski winning there. And then you take a look and jump it forward to this week to Las Vegas. And who's sitting on the pole? Brad Keselowski. So, and the interesting thing about all of this is when you look over the standings right now, very difficult to find any JGR drivers. Very difficult. In fact, you won't find one until you get to about 15th. Now, mind you, it's early in the season. So, and there's a lot of feeling out going on right now, but it would certainly appear at this point right now the Fords have come to play for sure this season.
Yeah, Toyota didn't lead a lap last week in Atlanta. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I was just mentioning. the Toyotas. We're going to talk about them today. We're going to talk a lot though about those Fords. So, from not only last week at Atlanta, but also this week, as I pointed out, as we head to Las Vegas. And speaking of Las Vegas, very, very interesting, from what I understand. Well, they're going to be getting a little more exposure starting next season on the NASCAR schedule as, how about, Las Vegas now getting a second race for the entire schedule? One of those now coming in the chase. So Las Vegas in the chase at this point, very, very interesting. So somebody had to be knocked out. We'll talk about that somebody. We'll talk about the fact Las Vegas is in there, which I frankly think is a good idea. I've often said, hey, why isn't Vegas in the chase? Makes sense. Coming into some of the colder months as you get into November, let's get Vegas in there. Makes sense to me. And so that's what we're going to be doing. But that, of course, at the loss of another track. So we'll talk about that one as well. And there was a report this past week. I guess it's all part of this kind of what are we calling this? The NASCAR makeover? Let's make this a more fan-friendly sort of sport. We got to draw people back to the tracks. We got to draw more. We got to draw a new audience. I talked about this a little bit last week. It seemed to me that they kind of missed the boat a little bit in doing some heavy-duty marketing. But nonetheless, we're still all concerned about trying to draw in the new fan. One of the things that's been proposed, let's make the cars quieter. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to quiet the car. They're just making too much noise. You know, that's what it's too much racket, noise pollution. And you know what the problem is? You can't talk to anybody when you're at the track. And you're sitting right next to somebody you can't talk to them. You know, you got to walk away. Honest to God, this is the kind of things that are being discussed and seriously, seriously being looked at. A study going on to take a look at, in fact, quieting the cars because people cannot communicate with other people while they are at the track. Yeah, I can imagine this is going to get some interesting comments here. We'll get into all of that. Hey, plus we've got an update for our fantasy. We'll get some insight from Sidekick there on what he thinks for Las Vegas here today. And we always have our always fun Eat My Dust winner picks. We'll see how everybody's doing in our little challenge for this year and who everybody will be picking to win today. If anybody wants to jump in with us, don't hesitate. We'd love to hear from you. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can hit us up in our Blog Talk Radio chat room or catch me over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get me on Twitter at Frat House Mike there. All right. So we got everybody. We got, and I'm noticing now we already have, thank you, Liz. I see Liz is in the chat room already. All right. So let's get the crew in here. You just heard one portion of the crew there. Sidekick is raring and ready to go at Vegas, flying high off of with all these Fords that are winning and qualifying well. Oh, it's a new day for the Fords. I said, you know what? We're just going to have to dub them the Make America Great Again team. That's what we're going to call the Fords from now on anymore. Hashtag MAGA team. There you go. All right. It's trending now on Twitter. Fords, MAGA. You're really thrilled about this, huh, Sidekick?
Well, you know, so I'm out of my funk, out of, having to put my cat down on Wednesday. Finally kind of settled down and that, went, had my, my can of Sunoco race fuel. Race is on today. I'm ready.
Ready to win. He's ready to win with the Fords.
I'm ready to chat racing. I'm ready to watch the race. I did finally, I was not on my game and I missed Daytona as we said, and I did not record it last week. So I got to sit down and, I watched Atlanta last week, first race. So I got to see the new, this new, what do you call it? The new, segment racing.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down, I watched the Xfinity race yesterday. Did you guys get a chance to watch the Xfinity race yesterday?
I did not watch the race. I saw the results.
On lap, with 30 laps to go, there was a caution, and Martin Wah, threaded the needle like the scene from Days of Thunder. There was a spin. One guy was backing up the track. The other guy was coming, going around the spin. This dude stuck his Camaro between the two of them and literally was like scraping the decals off the doors as he squeezed through. I had to rewind it 3 or 4 times just to watch it. It was probably one of the greatest saves I've ever seen in my life.
I wonder if NASCAR's got that up on their YouTube channel. I'll have to check to see whether
I'm gonna see if I can find it and post it. I mean, I can't find it, I've got it on the DVR and that. I'll use my phone and take a video of it and post it. Somebody was riding in that car with him because I don't know how he got through there. And he came pegging through there at full speed. Apparently, his spotter didn't tell him, to slow down or stop. I don't know what the radio communication was, but he came barreling through. Wow. With that said, though, after watching, you know, two races, I right now my impression of the segment racing is I like it.
I'm still not sure.
It would have been neat to see on a restrictor plate track, you know, like Daytona. And obviously, I guess my next opportunity to really see that will be Talladega. And I don't know how, how it looks, but, at least at Vegas and Atlanta, I'm a fan of the segment racing now.
All right. I was just going to say to you, what did you come away from? Because, I said I would keep an open mind, and I'm going to continue to do so. We need to see how it's going to play out on different tracks. I think that's going to be the key to it.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. But my initial after watching it on two tracks is, I kind of like it.
I mean, I can't say that I came away with any different opinion of it last week than I did the week before. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just kind of about it. I wouldn't say I hate it, but I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily, embracing it. That's just kind of where I am with the whole thing. I don't know. I don't see where it's enhanced. I don't see where it's enhanced anything at all so far. It certainly hasn't made the race go any quicker. If anything, I think it's making, I don't know. It just feels like to me they're longer. And I don't know if that's the thing that they want. Do we want fans walking away feeling like it's actually, whether it is or it isn't, they're actually feeling like it's longer? I mean, I think that's been one of the complaints, that some of these races are too long to begin with. So I don't know. That's just me. I mean, because so far, from what I've heard from both you and Brandon, is you're kind of okay with it. I don't want to speak for Brandon. Go ahead, Brandon, jump in.
No big deal. I like it so far. I don't see it as bad. The one piece I like about it is I like how they seem to fight for those get into top 10 as the segments are coming into an end. It's like those points are valuable. You saw it last week with Kevin Harvick. He dominated the race, won both early segments, and had late race, pit road speeding penalty. Comes back to ninth, but still leaves, with the most points because he won the two segments. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. I mean, I think that's kind of well fitting. I mean, he didn't win the race, but he certainly dominated it and he earned the most points. I think that's kind of, I think that's the intent of the system, more or less, right there. It's what you just saw this past week. So, I guess it's working if that's what they intended. I mean, it would suck if you to go out there, and we've seen it before where somebody will dominate. I mean, just absolutely dominate a race and then have a problem at the end. And then they get, whatever, they finish 30th and they get 30th place points. That's certainly not a true representation of their day. Well, now if you're getting, 10 points for each segment, that's 20 more points on top of that. Even a bad day now isn't quite so bad. Well,
point well taken. I mean, when you take a look at the standings right now, now we know that, the number one barometer in all of this are wins. So, technically Kurt Busch is number one, Keselowski's number two. But if you take a look simply at the points on the weight of 2 weeks worth of performances by Kevin Harvick is number one with 90 points. And then Kurt Busch is 86 points. And Keselowski has 84. Now, both of them, obviously, as I just pointed out, are technically ahead in the standings of Harvick because of the fact that they both have a win. But Harvick sits there, as you point out, Brandon, he would be a lot further down the list if it weren't for the new point system. Go ahead, Psychic.
Well, and Harvick has won three of the four opening segments.
Exactly.
So, indicated on, as you said, on the points lead. But the points lead doesn't really, in some respects, doesn't matter. You know, the wins matter and the bonus points.
I think the bonus points you're going to see play a bigger factor, at least in the early rounds of when they do the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see things like, you know, guys who have the big lead, you know, they're going to have, you know, I guess a slight advantage because they don't have to have that points cushion. You know, now I guess that would all equalize by the second round, I assume. You know, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how they could carry bonus points from round to round. So,
you're talking about in the chase. Yeah, it'll be curious.
Yeah,
I
don't think the bonus points transfer out of the first round. They only help you out in the first round. So, yeah.
But I think you're going to see a big difference though. When they go from, if they're still going to go 16 to 12, you know, the guys who have the most points, I think you're going to see them, you know, be able to stick in that top 12 a lot easier.
And see, another interesting thing, you know, when we talk about Kevin Harvick, you know, his nickname is the closer. But if you actually look back at the last five races, he's dominated the last five races, but hasn't won due to some late race mishap. You know, we saw it, you know, he was completely dominating Atlanta if it weren't for, you know, and he would have won had it not been for that, you know, speeding penalty there at the very end, you know, which, you know, bit him and what he come back finish, I think eighth or something. I think he got a top 10 out of it, but.
Last week?
Yeah.
He came back to finish ninth.
Ninth, okay.
You're talking Harvick, right?
Yeah.
He came back from having to start at the longest line to, you know, he just cracked the top 10 with like two to go, and he ended up getting one more. So, you know.
Yep.
That's where he ended up.
Ninth.
I guess we can start calling him Snake Bite, right?
Well, for the minute, albeit, I mean, listen, you know, go back to that, you know, I just keep going back to last year when they announced that Stewart Haas Racing was going to go over to Ford's. And, you know, I was highly skeptical that you were going to see this kind of, I guess, success this early, this quickly. You know, I wouldn't suggest that they wouldn't have any success, but I just didn't anticipate, you know, this soon, you know, right from the start. And here you've had Kurt Busch win at Daytona, Kevin Harvick, as you point out, Sidekick, leading, you know, three out of four of the segments that we've seen so far, sitting number one, Kevin Harvick sitting number one in points. And even somebody like Clint Boyer, I think, has run really, really well. In the first two races, finishing 11th last week at Atlanta. But, I mean, you know, for all his whining that he did last year about, you know, the equipment, I guess that's really what it did come down to. It comes down to, you know, get yourself in good equipment and, you know, you can have, you know, that can cover over all the problems. So,
I think they screwed up royally last year by making a public announcement about the switch to Ford at the start of last season. Because, I mean, inherently, if you're, you know, Chevy as a manufacturer or Rick Hendrick as the engine provider, you're not going to want to make a team that's going to Ford look good. You know what I mean? That's going to a rival. So, you know, I think they did themselves a bit of a disservice by announcing that at the beginning of the season, personally. You know, I think so, you know, now that the fact that they're doing well, you know, that's great. But I think that's, you know, I don't necessarily think they were getting the best of everything last year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just my own personal opinion.
I got you.
I don't think that was smart. Granted, I guess, you know, if the cat was out of the bag, it would have been hard to sit there and deny it and, you know, all that. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, you could have been a little smarter and kept your mouth shut. You know, I don't know. That's just me, I guess.
Yeah, but on the flip side of that, do you want that leaking out, you know, to the, you know, press, and it gets out there before you're ready to, you know, announce it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they may have made that announcement just to, you know, squash, you know, somebody coming out and breaking it, you know, rumor mill style, and then they're caught behind the eight ball saying, yeah, we're going to Ford next year.
Yeah, ain't that the case with everything nowadays, though, you know? I mean, it's almost impossible to keep anything a secret any longer. I mean, you know, social media and whatever. Yeah, and somebody's always spilling the beans, as you point out. I mean,
yeah.
You know, God knows this. This current administration at the White House knows all about that sort of thing. Where was I going to? Well, as it turns out, as I point out, you know, 292 laps Kevin Harvick led, and I was okay with it. And I'm not even a big Harvick fan, but I was okay with it. Hey, if Harvick wins, that's good. You know, to me, at least it's not one of the pesky boys, right? But as it turns out, that's what it turned out to be. Two-man race, basically, between Keselowski and Kyle Larson, particularly in the final lap. And, well, I've got the sound from it. Here's how it sounded last Sunday, final lap at Atlanta.
We'll have one lap to go, sponsored by Credit One Bank. When they made that extra pit stop to tighten up lug nuts, Keselowski and Paul Wolf had a brief exchange. It's okay. We'll get there. They are there. 19 races since Keselowski's last victory. That was at Kentucky. He's got 7 tenths on Kyle Larson. But for Roger Penske and Ford, Brad Keselowski wins the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. Kyle Larson,
watch
second.
Out, Brad. Way to come back, man. Stuck with it. Appreciate that, man. It was a long day. You did a great job. Thank you.
19 races since his last win. And I was checking on that one. That takes us back to July of last year. It didn't feel that long. At least to me, anyhow. It didn't feel that long. That's a pretty long stretch, though. I mean, you know, I was a little bit surprised when I'm hearing that again, you know, that it had been that long since Keselowski had actually won a race. So interestingly, though, as you watched the whole thing go on, you know, and it was Larson and it was Keselowski. I found it interesting because there were a couple of op-ed pieces that came out within the past, like, you know, a day or so after the race. A lot of them addressing exactly how Larson ran those last couple of laps, and particularly the last lap. And I don't know, it was just apparent to me with Larson in there and the way he was running that Keselowski was going to win this. Very interesting. Kyle Larson addressed style. And you know, when I talk about his style, I think both you guys know what I'm talking about. Kyle Larson, for some reason or another, it's just the way he is. We've seen him do it at one track after another. It doesn't seem to matter which track it is. And it doesn't seem to matter, you know, what the contours of the track are or what the idiosyncrasies are. Larson likes to run high. He runs high. He runs up against the wall. That's what he does. And it seems like he does that in every single track, and he doesn't change his style. That really was the difference in this, and that's why Larson didn't win it. He did not try to drive that bottom line. Larson himself actually talked about this after the race last week. This was Kyle Larson talking about it.
The high line work at most tracks. Here at Atlanta, I don't do a good enough job up top. That's why I try to commit myself to the bottom throughout the race. And, you know, there when I restarted the leader, you know, after our Christmas present we got there, and Brad lined up behind me. I knew he was going to be the one to beat. So, and I'd spent a lot of time around him throughout the race, and especially on the short runs, he was better than I was, and he would always pass me one and two. So I knew I was going to have to try and take his line away. You know, I tried a few times, and he finally kind of guessed where I was going, right one lap, and got to my inside. So, disappointed we didn't get the win, but we typically struggle really bad in the early races of the season. So, to finish second, this early in the year is awesome. We had a shot to win the 500 last week, and a shot again today. So that's all you can ask for, and can't be more proud of everybody at our Chip Ganassi Racing team, shop, Target, Credit One Bank, all the other partners. So, having fun.
Now, I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. I mean, it seems to me Larson has, even early in his career now, unless he finds a way to change things up, he's become somewhat predictable. Any thoughts on it?
No, you might be right. I think he even acknowledged it there sort of by saying he didn't do a good enough job on the high side. So that's why, they had him trying to run lower. He needs to, bring more to his game than, just running high all the time. And he probably is aware of that. That's not going to work, if you're a one trick pony, Because not every track is conducive to running that like that. It's not always the fastest way around. I mean, we've seen, Michigan, it's such a big, long, wide track. If you can run the bottom and stay fast at Michigan, you're going to kill. You don't want to be up high, there's certain tracks where, that works and other tracks where it don't. So he's probably realizing he needs to, adapt his skill set a little and, go from there.
Yeah, I sense it's it's a comfort level, probably a thing. That's probably what it is with him. But, I was sitting here watching the end of that race last week, and I'm going, this guy is not going to drop down. He's not going to – and I just knew he wasn't going to do it. I knew it. And I think Keselowski knew it too. I mean, it was almost obvious that he was not going to – he wasn't going to deviate from the way he normally runs. And I think for somebody as young as he is, and still starting out in his career, if he doesn't find a way to change that, that could be really detrimental. Any thoughts, Sidekick?
Actually, I have a completely different take from both of you.
Go ahead.
He ran down low the whole day. Whole day he was down there. Every time Keselowski passed him, he blew by him on the right side or on the outside. He had nothing for him, couldn't block him, couldn't do anything. So when it came down to the end of the race, he remembered all during the race, Keselowski taking him on the outside, taking him on the outside. He went outside to take the lane away from Keselowski. You just couldn't beat Keselowski is the problem. You know what I mean? He was that good. You could take the outside or the inside. He's going to take you, So Kyle Larson, remembered during the day, all those times he took him on the outside. So he went on the outside to try and hold him up, and he went on the inside and just blew right by him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
I think a lot of people are making something out of nothing.
Well, I don't remember. I'm going to be honest with you. In from what I remember seeing Larson drive on last Sunday, and I'm not saying he was never driving down the lower groove, but it always appeared to me he was up there. He was, up against that wall all the time. That's where he likes to drive it. That's what it seemed to me. You might be right. I mean, he may have driven the whole race down there. I don't know, but
I went back and I watched part of the race. Also, this was a topic that they had on NASCAR America on NBC this week. And they went back and they showed, because they did talk about Larson. Apparently that's the thing to talk about this week was the fact that Kyle Larson went high. And they went back and they showed all the clips of, Brad you know, blown right by him on the outside. You know what I mean? And, you know, but, you know, more than we're talking about, you know, Kyle Larson, Brad Keselowski was just on fire at the end. You know,
yep.
which is weird because, you know, in that third segment, you know, he had a loose lug and had to come back in.
That's right.
They had the one caution. He comes in. They didn't get the lugs on. He had to come back in so that they could tighten the lugs. So, you know, he fought back from that and won the race. I mean, that just tells you, you know, what his car was like. You know, I think the only person that could have beat him was Kevin Harvick. But unfortunately, you know, Kevin got caught speeding on that, you know, that money shot pit stop there at the end of the race.
Yep.
You know, and that sunk his day. I mean, there was 13 speeding penalties in that race.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about it. It was actually starting to get on my nerves. I'm going to be honest with you. Now, look, you know, I know. It is what it is, and, you know, we've got this thing automated now, and it's probably accurate, and there's no disputing it, and if you get caught speeding, you were probably speeding. But frankly, I don't know. I was just getting annoyed by it, you know. I guess it's kind of like, you know, when you're watching a football game and it seems like every play somebody's offside. After a while, you just start to get annoyed at it. And you're not annoyed at the fact, you know, you're not so much annoyed at the players who probably are offsides. You get annoyed at the referee who keeps calling the damn flag. That's kind of where I was with it.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the kind of the crux of it is, hey, you know, crew chiefs and drivers, you know, stop trying to skirt the rules. You know, stop trying to push it. You know, yeah, we know that you're going to try and push it down pit road. You know, but you also at the same time know that this year NASCAR has doubled the timing loops at practically every track.
Right.
So the chance for you to get caught is even greater. Now, having said that, NASCAR this week has said, and if you caught qualifying, NASCAR this week said, hey, look, here's what, you know, because obviously, you know, everybody in the, you know, in the pits were, you know, complaining about this to NASCAR, you know. So NASCAR this week, they said, okay, what we're going to do in qualifying and practice is, you know, we've got the dashboard, all the scoring data. We're going to have that available to you so that when you guys are running, you can come down and you can look and you can see all the scoring loops and you can see where, you know, and they showed us, you know, the camera actually showed it where you can see the red, you know, it automates, you know, and it flags the drivers, you know, and
yep.
shows red on this, you know, this dashboard, electronic dashboard thing. So they allowed the crew chiefs or the pit crews access to that this week. So that they could look at it, so that they could, you know, and you saw people doing pit, you know, practicing pit stops and that, and looking at that data so that they could get a better grip on, you know, so that that doesn't happen again this week or, you
yeah,
know, in
I,
the future.
You know,
so.
Part of the problem, I think, too, is, and of course, again, I'm not saying that it has to be uniform because I think it would be impossible to make it uniform. But the limit, the speed limit, changes from one track to the next. And if I'm not mistaken, was it 45 at Atlanta?
That might be right.
I believe
so. I think 45-50 is like the average for the most tracks. Daytona, they have to go a little faster because of the gear ratios in the car really couldn't allow for it to go much slower. I think it's like 60. And at the short tracks, they really go slow. So they're like 30 or 35.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it all depends on how much room there is. In other words, if it's a tighter pit road and
right.
there's less, what's the word? I guess, you know, square footage to the pit stall so you can get in and out quicker without, you know, they don't want to risk any crew members getting hurt, you know, by cars coming in too fast. So if it's a tighter, more confined pit road, it generally has a slower speed limit.
Right.
I was thinking, though, I heard, and I don't know, it might have been Mike Joy, but during the rash of speeding penalties, that sidekick that you just brought up, during that rash of them that we saw being called there, one after another, it seemed like, I think Joy indicated that Atlanta has the slowest speed limit of the mile and a half on pit road. And I was thinking he said 45. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, see, what I was going to say was, you know, one other thing to remember is they also get a, you know, it's like a, you know, a regular traffic stop. You get a 5 mile an hour variance. You know, so it's not, you know, if pit road speed is 45, they're not clocking anybody that's, you know, at 45.01. They're flagging people that are at 50.01.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's like, you know, again, I place it back on the drivers saying, hey, we know we got a 5 mile an hour variance. So really pit road speed to us is 50 miles an hour. And you're kind of, you know, at that, you know, you're kind of, you know, rolling the dice. You might crap out.
Yep. Yeah. Well, good point. Good point. I mean, you know, the fact that they've got that 5 mile, you know, plus minus, yeah, I mean, you know, they're really probably, we probably shouldn't be seeing the number of them that we are. Obviously, the reason we are is, as you point out, they've increased the number of these, I guess, monitors, and it's all automated now. So, I mean, you know, nobody's getting through the cracks. You know, you brought up the fact that Keselowski had to actually come in, you know, because he had loose lugs, you know, in that final stage. Wanted to bring up, interestingly, following the race, A.J. Allmendinger and his crew, pretty hefty fine and penalty for a lug nut violation. Crew chief Randall Burnett has been suspended for 3 races and fined $65,000 for a lug nut violation on A.J. Allmendinger's number 47. In addition, Allmendinger's team has been assessed 35-point driver and owner penalties, and that dropped Allmendinger from 11th to 34th in the driver's standings. Boy, that pretty hefty for they're taking this lug nut thing to a whole new level. That's a hefty fine penalty right there. Seriously, and you know, Allmendinger's run pretty well so far this year. So, just wanted to bring that one up. Anyhow, as I pointed out, you take a look at the overall standings. We've already mentioned our numbers 1, 2, and 3. Kurt Busch, Brad Keselowski, Kevin Harvick. They're at 1, 2, 3. But you have to, as I pointed out, you have to go all the way down to number 15 before you find a JGR Toyota on the list. Matt Kenseth sitting at 15th. Denny Hamlin at 18th. Kyle Busch at 24th, and Daniel Suarez at 30th. Now, Martin Truex Jr., who, of course, drives a Toyota as well, currently sitting in 7th place in the standings. So that's your first Toyota. But as far as those JGRs, you got to go down the list a bit. You know, when you take a look at it, Matt Kenseth is below drivers like Almirola, Trevor Bayne, Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney's actually, I think, been one of the bigger surprises so far this year, and a pleasant one, too. Jamie McMurray, I mean, this is where Matt Kenseth is. He's behind all of those at this point. So a little bit unusual, but early yet, right, guys?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll see. Maybe it's too early. You only have two races, so. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It won't start to stabilize till you hit like five.
And we've got an interesting situation. I mean, you know, when we take a look at the qualifying order for today, I know that we've got, in fact, hold on a second. Let me just take a look at this a second. You know, you got Matt Kenseth sitting there at fourth, Martin Truex at number two. So the Furniture Row Toyota is running very, very well so far this year. Kyle Busch at ninth. Daniel Suarez coming in at 11th on the in qualifying. So Toyotas are sitting there today. So we'll see how, you know, we'll talk about qualifying order here momentarily. So anyhow, there's wanted to bring that one up. Any other thoughts with regard to Atlanta or the standings or anything like that? Anything else anybody can think of that they want to bring up? Sidekick?
How about, I'm sorry, I'm just looking over my notes here that I took from the race. How about RCR with their power issues?
That was a little weird. I'll give you that.
They're at the end of the race. Both of them going out with, I guess, some sort of battery failure.
And it took seemingly took forever for them to sort it out.
You know, and actually on top of that, then you can go and look at Harvick's wife's tweet where, you know, she was extremely pissed and used some foul language about Austin Dillon because Austin Dillon caused her husband to lose the race. It was that caution that came out that, you know, Harvick got caught speeding and she didn't have some kind words for him because he didn't get his tail end off the track soon enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't his fault, though. He was coming into pit road. The crew told him to stay out because they thought he could reset something with his computer and reboot it and it would run because they sounded like they knew for sure what the issue was. So, you know, her going off on him, he only did what he was told. You know,
he was following.
That's not his fault. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was following the protocol.
You know what? She should just shut her mouth sometimes.
Oh, I know. She
really should.
Yeah, I'm not I'm a fan of Harvick, but yeah, you know, he needs to ditch that wife.
Oh, well.
Or shut. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know. She has a huge Twitter following. So if she goes on a rant, it's going to make news. I mean, she probably has more damn Twitter followers than half the damn drivers do. I mean, because she's just, you know, she's a Twitter whore. She's on there all the time giving updates, you know, for the, you know, race by race updates. So, you know, I think she's into millions as far as followers. And I bet there's some drivers on the field who don't even have, you know, 800,000 followers. So, you know, it's just, she should realize that. You know, her husband's a very high-profile driver, and she should shut her mouth because, you know, it ain't always right to go trashing a fellow competitor when you don't know everything that's truly happened. I mean, he clearly was going to pit.
Well, but also at the same time, though, you know, she wears the pants in that family. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? He's a hell of a racer, and you can't take that away from him, but when you look at Kevin Harvick, the brand, that's all her. That's not him. You know what I mean? You got KHI management, you know, where, you know, they're, you know, they manage, you know, UFC superstars, motocross, all these people, you know. So, you know, I think that's part of why she has such a big Twitter following and why she feels the need to be, you know, to just say what she wants on Twitter about stuff because she's empowered. You know, she's the one behind the brand. And, you know, at times it's like, yeah, can you just shut up and stick to your job?
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's funny.
And I don't mean that sexist as in you're the wife, stick to your job. I mean, you're a brand manager. Stick to managing your brand. You know what I mean? Stop, you know, butting in and, you know, telling people, you know, that they, you know, they don't know how to drive and stuff like that, you know. You know, since
well,
this, you know, International Women's Day was this week, and I don't want the hate coming towards me.
I hear you. Yeah, exactly. just as an FYI, Delana has 313,000 followers. 313,000. Kevin's got 863,000. That's just an FYI. Listen, it's 313. That's, you know, hell of a lot more than I do.
I thought she had over a million.
I'll double check real quick. Blue check mark. That's her. So
yeah.
Just checking to make sure it's a verified account.
I just thought it was more.
She's tweeted a lot. 47,000, almost 48,000 tweets.
She's probably good for 100 tweets a race. Like she sometimes tweets their pit strategies and all kinds of shit. She's like all over the place. I mean, she's giving out stuff, you know. Like, I don't know. I'd be mad, honestly, if I was, you know, if she's giving out strategies that other teams could see. You know, I don't know if I'd like that. Because I know she's done it before.
Well, anyhow, one of the things I wanted to bring up unless there's anything else you guys want to bring up about Atlanta, if there was anything else in your notes there, Psychic, I don't know if there was anything else in your notes.
No, I think that's... Yeah,
I know. I can tell you this much. I got a hell of a power nap in between segment like one and two. You know, just saying. I mean, I don't know if it was me or what, but
there's an endorsement.
Wow.
That's a hell of an endorsement. Honest to God,
part of the race. You know what? It's so hard to not get a nap during the race.
Oh my gosh. That is it.
Hey,
my
father's been known to do it in the grandstands at the track, no matter how loud the cars are.
I was going to say, and that's without the quieter, gentler cars.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I do have one interesting note that was kind of scribbled, kind of small, and I missed. So over the interesting stat, over the last 10 races, there's been 70 speeding penalties.
Wow.
Well, you know, again, I go back to what I said before. I mean, they're a nuisance, and I find it somewhat annoying, but you can't dispute them with the way that they've got things worked out now.
Yeah,
it's
not like those phantom cautions that we used to talk about.
Exactly.
You know what
I
mean? It's right there in green and red.
Exactly. You can't, you know, there's no disputing it.
And that's the problem. It's not a human being. It's literally a machine doing math. You know, you went from this loop to that loop. We know the loop is this distance. We knew you did it in this time. You were going X miles an hour. Red.
Exactly. I throw this out there again. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Would we see this sort of thing diminish on the part of the drivers if, in fact, they had actual speedometers in the car?
They do.
I thought they didn't.
They do with the new digital dash. They do have a speedometer readout now. They do have a speed readout.
Then they don't have an excuse.
They don't even have to look for the number, Mike. The whole dash turns red if you're going too fast.
Yeah.
And it's green if you're under the speed limit.
But that's after the fact, isn't it?
No, while they're driving down pit road, if they go faster than they're supposed to be, the whole thing turns red. And then if they slow down, it goes back to green. They can tell as they're on the track if they're passing the speed limit. They're just trying to sneak away to get as much little extra as they can in between the segments.
Well,
and
listen, nobody. I don't want to hear any bitching from anybody.
I agree.
Nobody should be complaining.
Well, the only argument against that dash coloring is that there is a slight delay, but in the the readout for when it changes. Whereas the scoring loops don't have any, there's no delay. So sometimes by the time the dash changes and they pick up on it, they're already busted.
So you're telling me it's not properly calibrated?
No, it's just, it's not that it's not calibrated. It's the computer interface. There's just a hint of a delay in it, and then you have to, you have to pick it up with your eyes and register that you're going too fast. You know what I mean? So there is, there's a bit of human error in there and a bit of, technology. But the point is, if you weren't trying to, if you're not trying to push it, you're not going to get caught. Of course, if you're not trying to push it, you're not going to win races.
you're not going to win a race. Guys, come on, seriously. You're not going to win a race racing down pit road. Nobody should even try to tell me that one. Please stop it.
No, on that last pit stop, on the last pit stop of the day, before when you think you're going to the checkered, that's the money stop. I mean, races can be won and lost on that stop. You can have you can get a loose lug. You can they're literally trying to get that hundredth of a second quicker down pit road and off pit road so that, it's the difference between them coming out, and we've seen it, they show it after every caution, so-and-so gained 4 spots, so-and-so dropped 4 spots. You have a bad, you come down, you have a bad pit stop, your day's done. You just lost the race, buddy. And that's penalties aside.
No, and we know this, and it was all part of that whole 2 years ago when we saw the loose lug nut controversy. They were trying to throw them on too quickly and, excuse me, cut off a couple of seconds, out of the pit crew. And no, I get it. I understand all that. And you're right. It does make a difference. We saw that. We saw it makes a difference. But I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me that it's not worth it. That bottom line is
it's
not worth it.
It's not worth the speeding penalty. So stop.
Exactly.
I mean, Jimmy Johnson had 2 or 3 last week alone.
Ugh.
Well, here's the thing.
After you get the first one, next time, slow down. Damn.
Would you rather it be like F1 where the cars automatically go to a certain speed and the drivers can't go any faster? In other words, they have a system in place where once they hit pit road, the cars are like limited and they will not go beyond a certain speed. It's all computer controlled.
That's an interesting concept.
But would you like that? Yeah, would you like to remove the chance of a speeding penalty?
I was going to say no, because now
you're
taking
just dumbing it down.
Yeah, now you're taking out the driver element.
Right. They have. Trust me, the technology exists. They do it. They could set it up where the car can't go over whatever 30, 35, 40, 45, whatever you set it to be, because they can just, they'll make the ignition cut out if it approaches that. So
that is an interesting concept, though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Listen, I saw a video. I saw a video last night. I forget where it was. There was video last night of a car running a racetrack, driver behind the wheel, in full gear, helmet, the whole bit. He's got his hands off the wheel. The car is running at about 120 miles an hour, and it's driving itself completely around the track. You see the wheel turning, the whole bit. The driver was doing nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
He was simply behind the wheel. That's all he was doing. It was the most mind-boggling thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, they say self-driving cars are not that far away. That they're
already out on the road
in a roundabout way, yeah. The question is going to be, is legality state to state, I think, is the biggest question. I don't know how that's going to.
Google's got one. I forget. Somebody. Is it.
I think Ford has one. I think Ford has one, at least in a prototype. I know that. I've seen pictures of them. You know, and they've. I saw a little video, too, you know, about one of these ones where they just. Uber's another one that's big behind it. Uber wants to develop, you know.
Oh, sure they do.
Take the driver out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because now they make all the money.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know?
Oh, man alive. That's, I don't know. It's mind-numbing to me. I can't even imagine it. But
I'll be honest, you know, a self-driving car, yeah, I think that'd be nice on a long trip. Problem is, it probably wouldn't make as good a time. And if you really wanted to make good time, they probably won't break the speed limit or something.
Yeah, see, now, if they're going to do it, they're going to have to clone a sidekick.
Yeah.
That would be That would be the equivalent of buying the deluxe model.
Right?
Right? See, you know, you get them in different models. And you can get the Sidekick deluxe model, which is, you know, you run everywhere 20 miles over the speed limit.
Yep.
Oh, God, that's
safely,
terrible.
Though. I mean, yes.
Yes, true.
Not erratic. It's not like a, you know, he doesn't drive like a cab driver in, you know, down in the city, you know.
Nothing
he's
better.
He's a highway driver.
I was going to say there is nothing better than the flat plains of Indiana. Go out there and ride those flat
Illinois.
Plains. Right. And I'll tell you something. You'd be surprised how fast the vehicle can go. Holy smokes. What were we doing? 110?
Yeah, I think about 115.
Oh,
I think
my
116
God.
Is when the limiter comes in. I've been meaning to change that.
It was wild, though, because I got to tell you something. It didn't even feel like it. Now, I don't know if it's because of the road. I mean, when you're out there, it's just so flat. But it didn't even feel like it, you know. I'm chatting away on the phone. All of a sudden, I look over and I look at the speedometer. I damn near jumped out of my seat. I couldn't believe it.
And I did. I went to it. That phone rang, and as soon as that phone rang, he was 5 minutes into that conversation. And next thing you know, we're over 100.
Holy smokes.
Well, we had to make up time. We were about 4 hours late.
Oh, we were making time up, all right. We were making some time up. I'm going to tell you. Wow. But it didn't feel like it. I'll tell you, it did not feel like it. I got to be honest. I personally have never driven a vehicle that fast. I'm trying to think what the maximum is that I've ever gotten a car up to. I think 90, maybe 90. That's about as fast as I've ever taken a car up. But
I think I've had a car at 120. I know I've had motorcycles faster, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I've had to.
Have you had a motorcycle at 120? Have you had a motorcycle at 120?
I've had my Bandit at 132. I've had my buddy Ron's Hayabusa at 155. And that's when I'm like, okay, you know, it was, you know, many years, you know, right after he got it back in 2008, we switched. He flew by me on mine, so I obliged. I cracked his. I never even got it into sixth gear. And I looked down and saw 155, and I'm like, you know what? I'm done. And rolled
I
out.
I need to go change my pants.
You know, it didn't even.
I'm going to tell you.
155. Yeah, but 155 on that bike felt like 100 on my bike. You know, and at 130 on my bike, you got so much more wind, you really feel it. So it's like, you know what I mean? Because that bike, the Hayabusa just has more fairings and way more aerodynamic. And if you duck down under the bubble of the windshield, you feel like you're like sailing on air if you're on a flat, you know, straight flat road. Didn't even realize it, really.
I got to tell you, that would make me, I would get a little unnerved. I really would. At 155,
it was invigorating. Don't think I'll do it again.
Invigorating. Listen to this. Now, were you on a flat, straight road?
Yes. Yeah, we were on a flat section of 422 out towards Douglasville at the end there. that was freshly repaved, and there was, we went down one way and came back the other, so we knew there was nothing around. So, yeah, it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it goes. They
it,
go.
It
you
does.
Can get them running.
Yeah, obviously. All right.
I think my days of that kind of stuff are probably over, but, you know, that was, oh, heck, that's a new, he got that new in 2008, so we're, that's almost 10 years ago already, believe it or not. It's hard to believe. Time flies when you're having fun, you know? He
well,
had it all the way up to the limiter. The way those things, the way those are limited, they cut out at 300 kilometers per hour, which is about 179.6 mile per hour. That's where the computer makes it stop.
So Ron had it up to almost 180?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he did. And you can do stuff to make the computer bypass that, and they'll go over 200 stock. If you put a thing in to help control, you know, to bypass the computer or to reprogram the computer, they call it a power commander, you can make it. It'll go 200 stock.
And I'm trying to think.
It doesn't even. It won't even try hard.
180 is about what they do on the smaller bikes, Brandon, if I'm not mistaken, in NHRA.
I think they go. Actually, I think they're close to. I think they're doing 200 now.
I don't
know. In a quarter mile.
I think you're. You don't see too many twos. Mostly
no,
one.
They're in the high 190s all the time.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about the top fuel
one. It takes longer than a quarter mile to get it to 200, though. Trust me, stock.
Because what are the top fuel ones doing now? They're doing over 200.
Yeah, they're going 200 in like 6 seconds.
Yep.
From something stupid. Those things are insane.
That's crazy. Those things are scary. They're
yeah,
scary.
They,
just
I don't.
To look
the way
at.
They stop scare me.
They're scary.
I wouldn't
want
to try
to
stop
at.
It. Yeah.
Oh. That's the new
so
rage.
There's your talk on
that's
speed
the new rage
today.
Sidekick. We've got this year NHRA has introduced top fuel nitro motorcycles.
Yeah, that's okay.
They have to wear a bulletproof vest just to start it. Because if the cylinder or no, to just to ride it, they won't even sit over it when they start it. They start it off to the side because if it would explode, they would send shrapnel up. So they, as they're running down the track, they have a bulletproof vest on in case the engine blows up because they're worried about shrapnel.
Yeah.
Believe that?
I'm sorry. No.
Yeah. That's kind of what I said. If I have to wear a bulletproof vest to ride it, I'm out.
And I got to tell you something. You just got to, I mean, forget ever wanting to even get on one of these. You just got to see them on the track. They are, it's incredible just to see them. And they have chutes. Dude, they have chutes that are supposed to slow them down.
Chutes and ladders?
I mean, I've never seen a motorcycle with a parachute off of it.
It is a little odd. It's a small parachute, not as big as the car ones, but
right.
It's odd, and you know what?
Wild.
It doesn't look like it really slows them down as enough. Even those guys are
no,
fighting those
doesn't.
Things to slow them down.
No, it doesn't. I brought it up here at the top of the program. Las Vegas. We're in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is getting themselves a second race. Starting next season, they will be getting a race in the Chase. Actually, in fact, where was I? I wanted to pull up the article where I was reading this from. They will be replacing the September race, albeit as Brandon and I discussed a little bit yesterday. My guess would be they'll juggle the schedule around a little bit and put Las Vegas not in September. They'll probably put it later in November. That would be my guess. But it would actually be replacing the second New Hampshire race. Very interesting. New Hampshire, not very pleased by the whole thing. They're not real happy about it. And Brandon and I got talking about it a little bit last night. I'm okay with Las Vegas getting a second race, and I'm okay with Las Vegas going into the chase. It kind of made sense to me. We've talked about it a lot during the chase. You know, get the warmer climbs involved in the chase, particularly when you start to get into late October and early November. So I'm okay with it. I'm also okay in some respects with New Hampshire being knocked out of there. If I'm not mistaken, I think New Hampshire was one of the ones, guys, we've talked about on the schedule. Why does New Hampshire have two races to begin with? Because I don't think really there's too many of us that are real big fans of the New Hampshire track anyhow. But nonetheless, New Hampshire, not too pleased about it. I think we were talking about this a little bit last night, but New Hampshire being one of the independent, I guess, independent tracks. Brandon, is that the proper way to describe it?
Yeah. It's one of the, it's not part of ISC or SMC, the two big track conglomerates. So
actually,
ISC are the NASCAR tracks, and the other ones, Speedway Motorsports is Humpy Wheeler and the guys who own Charlotte, Texas, Kentucky, you know, those tracks. So there's basically, you know, basically half the tracks are owned by one, the other half, you know, are owned, you know, and then there's a handful that are like Dover that are one-offs. Dover's not either, Pocono's neither, New Hampshire's not, you know, so you got a handful of, you know, one-off tracks, but, you know, most of them are either ISC or Speedway Motorsports.
Actually, it is SMI owned.
Who?
New Hampshire is?
New Hampshire is.
Oh, it is Speedway Motorsports?
Yes.
Oh, so yeah, I can imagine they're really pissed.
So it's, well, but Vegas is owned by SMI as well.
Correct.
So it's staying within the company. I completely hate this idea. Here's why I hate this idea.
Wow.
So
why?
We're now going to have six intermediate tracks in the chase by taking New Hampshire out. And basically the reason why that track is coming out, and they said as much, the owner said it, and as a business owner, he said it's a great deal. As a fan, I don't like the deal, but unfortunately, I can't do anything about it. Vegas is ponying up $17 million over 7 years.
Yep.
So that they can have that second race in the chase. And so now our 10-race chase is made up of six intermediate-style tracks. How is that any way to, you know, basically deem our winner when six of those track, you know, six of the races you have to do are all on the same kind of, you know, the same style of track, you know, and we still don't have a road course. Now, with that said, they are currently upgrading the road course in Charlotte.
Right.
At Charlotte Racetrack, so that they can have Charlotte be a road course race in the chase.
All right. Right. And I think I know that we have talked about it. We may not have actually brought that up on the air.
Well, that takes away one of the intermediates, too, there, Sidekick.
Well, I am hoping.
Well,
that's
they're saying in, for 2018, it's a done deal. They're doing they're rebuilding or, you know, doing the modifications needed. But they had Allmendinger run a test, and he said it's, you know, it's good. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
You know,
I personally would rather them put that Charlotte road course in the regular season and put a Watkins Glen or a Sonoma in the chase, personally.
But I think Watkins Glen would be the best one for the chase. It's so close already.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them add Road Atlanta to the regular season. Or not Road Atlanta, Road America, the one up in Wisconsin and Green Bay. Right. Or outside of Green Bay. I think that would
be
there
nice. You go.
The
Charlotte
one.
Completely.
The Charlotte one, whatever. It's a gimmick. I don't know if you should have a gimmick race in the chase the first time. I think the first time it should be out. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah,
they're doing what they got to do.
Yeah. Then the problems that they have with New Hampshire, going back to New Hampshire, is it's kind of a political thing. So they agreed with the local, politicians that they would not have lights at the track and they could not host music fests. And that's basically the, they kind of were going to pull that second race out. But
sounds like Monster stepping in to me. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that you got to, remember is the racing absolutely sucks at New Hampshire. I'm sorry. It's a flat track.
I agree.
Let's call it what it is. The track
is
not a good track.
Nope,
Phoenix,
we've talked about
where we're going to next week, is a flat 1 mile track. Yet they managed to have it that you can pass, and it's a very entertaining race. New Hampshire, it just isn't. There's whoever designed that. It's a design flaw or a combination of that and the grading or the surface itself. The track is just not conducive to a good race. So, take away the lights, take away whatever side stuff you can't have at it. The bottom line is the track sucks. So let's get rid of it, put it to one, and move on. I mean, I think it's better. I agree with Sidekick, and the point is I don't want to see too many intermediate tracks in the chase. I'd like to see, a short track. I think that Richmond's the last short track that's prior to the chase, and then I think they do have what is Martinsville in there in the chase is the only one. So you have one. I'd like to see a real road course, not necessarily just the Charlotte, turned into one. You have Talladega. So, I'd like to see a little bit more mix of stuff in there, like instead of having all of the same kind of track that's just a little different. You know what
yeah.
I mean? I agree with Sidekick on that one big time.
Yeah, it's not really so much a dig against Las Vegas per se as it is. Like you said, we need some variation.
Right. Vegas would be good to keep, would be a nice one to keep in there. Maybe you get rid of even the Charlotte. Or is there a Texas in there still, I think, in the chase?
Yep.
Yeah, so that could go. Texas is redundant when you have Vegas. Get rid of Texas and, I'd like to see Pocono in there. But I don't know, weather-wise, you probably can't do that.
It's going to be tough. Texas, I think Texas is on the calendar simply because of the climate. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in early November.
Well, Texas, we got to remember, when Texas was originally built, they were trying to clone Charlotte. So, talk about cookie cutters. I mean, it was built off the designs of Charlotte Motor Speedway. It's like, do we really need that and both of them in there? Come on. But,
I agree with you.
That's a rant for another time. I didn't realize that the tracks are both owned by the same company. I feel less annoyed by it than I did now, knowing that. I always thought New Hampshire must have been acquired by Speedway Motorsports at some point.
That's what I think it was. When I was watching it, they said who the original owner was, and basically they made the agreement with the local town.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's part of the them buying the track.
From SMI's point of view, if they have a track like Las Vegas where you can make better gate, have less restrictions, no rules, it's in the middle of the damn desert next to an Air Force base, you can have lights, you can have all the noise you want. Why would you not move a race from a track where you're restricted that's, doesn't put on the best show to one that does a little bit better in every category? It's probably more beneficial. For SMI, really.
And you're benefiting again because of the, I really think, climate and weather come into play.
Well, certainly. Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree. There's absolutely. You know, that's good.
You're running SMI. SMI did promise, as part of losing the second race, that they were going to put more into the first race.
Well, that's
yeah. Nice. They right. I'm kind of with. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, yeah.
It's still a shit track. It's not going to ever be a good track. There's a lot of Dave. They're psychic. There's a lot of tracks we could go down the list and say, okay, that track should only have one race. You know, I think Dover should only have one race. I think there should be more short tracks, a different short track, you know, brought back into NASCAR. I think only having three short tracks, while you'll have what, 10, 12, 18 of these intermediate things, it's ridiculous. They need to have more diversity in their track layouts.
Right.
I wouldn't say more restrictively, because restrictively they're good with what they got. You know, two tracks at four races, that's enough of that garbage. But, you know, I think they have too much of these mile and a half tracks.
I'm going to tell you something. It might be a bad product, and it might be a lousy track. But according to USA Today, the track has been a key player in the state's tourism industry. According to a 2011 Southern New Hampshire University study, the two Sprint Cup races at NHMS added $179 million in spending and $103 million in income, generating 1,000 full-time jobs and 1,500 part-time jobs. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's what races generated. Now, you can understand why New Hampshire might not be too pleased with losing one of them.
Right. And see, the concern I have is, I understand that, you know, it's not the best product there and everything.
Right.
But when we talk about, you know, racetracks, you know, like Wilkesboro, we see some of these dilapidated, you know, uncared for tracks that harken back to, you know, the nostalgia and, you know, that we talk about so much in, you know, with NASCAR, and, you know, they're just laying dormant, you know, unused, unkept, you know, some of the fear also is that, you know, New Hampshire, now they've taken the one away, you know, in the near future, they could be completely done in New Hampshire.
Correct.
They just completely cut it out of, you know, and now it becomes a Wilkesboro where, you know, it's just weeds.
Right. And as you point out, they already are dealing with some limitations anyhow, without things like lights and ancillary entertainment that they've got an agreement with the local municipality with. So they're already operating with a bit of a handicap. So I think it's a point well made. Go ahead.
Here's where the local municipality should get their head out of their rectum and realize, you know, if we wouldn't hold these restrictions to this track, maybe it wouldn't lose a race. In other words, maybe if they allowed the track to put lights in and do other things, that, hey, maybe they'd be able to two races and keep all that tourism money and all that revenue that they're whining about losing. You know what I mean? You're the ones who handcuffed the facility. So if the facility or the product, you know, in the facility finds your rules too restricting, well, they're going to go elsewhere. So really, in a roundabout way, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
Well, maybe Brian France should send a letter to the New Hampshire, Senate and Congress, and, you know, say, hey, you know, there's a problem here. And
maybe this was the letter. Okay, here's one. You got a couple years to change stuff if you want to keep two.
As we've talked about, make no mistake, I believe a lot of this is being driven by the new sponsor. You know, the new sponsor. When you take a look at things like, you know, just like, for instance, to give you a perfect example, today's race, guys, is at 3:30 this afternoon, Eastern time. Well, as I pointed out, and as you're going to see throughout this entire season, a lot of the races are not as early in the afternoon as we become used to. Why? This is all being driven by the new sponsor. We've got to adapt.
Las Vegas and Phoenix have always been later
not
starts. 3:30. They're on the
not
West Coast.
Yeah, but not 3:30. They've been 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock starts.
I think you're splitting hairs. I don't think it's that much. I don't think it's that big of a difference. I clearly remember other West Coast races starting at 3. Maybe not 3:30, but definitely 3.
Well, you're going to be blown away as we get into this season when you come across how many 3 o'clock races there are. Pocono, 3 o'clock in July. Indianapolis, 3 o'clock in July. New Hampshire, 3 o'clock in July. These races have all been shifted back. There are only 3 races out of 36 on the calendar that are in the 1 o'clock hour.
Wow.
3.
Well, how does that work? And if what? Wait a minute. New Hampshire's starting at 3. Boy, they don't have a whole lot of rain delay windows if they don't have lights.
Yep.
Kind of seriously handcuffing that track.
Listen, their one in September starts at 2. So that was always a 1 o'clock. So
yeah.
It's very, very interesting.
Well, anything,
I mean,
anything East Coast used to be 1 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
You know? Your 2 o'clocks would be your like, Chicago's, Kansas, middle stuff. And then, like, Phoenix, California, Sonoma, all those used to be 3. They've always been 3. I don't know about 3:30, but they've been 3 because of the time difference.
Martinsville in October, end of October is 1 o'clock.
Interestingly, I think they now have lights there.
Dover,
they just added them.
Dover in June is 1 o'clock.
Dover still does not have lights.
Texas in April is 1:30. That's it. Those are your 1 o'clock races.
Maybe they did add lights at Dover. They might have added lights at Dover. I don't remember now.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But see, I don't know how much of this is necessarily, you know, it's very easy to peg everything on Monster because they're the new sponsor. But I think it's also NASCAR chasing after what we've been talking about with, you know, attendance problems, viewerships down, all that stuff. So I don't know, you know. I think some of this is Monster driven, but some of this just maybe NASCAR chasing after, you know, trying to, you know, stabilize the product.
No doubt about it. It's a combination of both, Psychic, in my opinion. I think what Monster has done is Monster said, if you want us in here and you want us for anything longer than 2 years, which is what I think they are, then guess what, guys? You're going to have to look yourself hard in the mirror. And that's what they're doing.
Well,
they're
let's
giving
look at
them
it,
an,
though.
They're giving
at
them
from
an
this point of, something had to change.
I agree.
Something,
I agree.
So, you know what? Let's give Monster – I'm all for giving them a shot. They've proven in other race series that they're good for that race series. They've made other race series thrive. You know, let's see if they can, you know, give NASCAR a shot in the arm and keep going, because on the track it was going nowhere but down. I mean, mm-hmm. ratings were consistently dropping from race to race, year to year. Attendance has gone through the floor. I mean, buying a ticket for NASCAR, you know, I still have permanent seats at Richmond, which I'm paying full price for. The sad part is the same tickets can be bought for almost half price closer to the race. You know, it's like it's dumb, you know, the way these tracks have gone to. Some of it. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. I'm all for giving. If Monster's got a plan, you know, and it's going to piss some off, but it makes the overall better, I'm okay with it.
I hear you. And listen, I'm giving them a chance. I'm just saying, I really believe that a lot of it is being driven by Monster saying, you know, NASCAR, we're going to make you accountable. You got to be accountable, period. And is there anything wrong with that? No, there's nothing wrong with that. All right, I'm looking at the clock. Holy smokes. We got a little bit less than 5 minutes remaining here. So let's move around here real fast. And we got to get into taking a look at a little bit of I just wanted to pull up the standings here real quick. A little bit of fantasy chit-chat in our league at the current time right now. The Little Beast, number one. Thunder Down Under is number two. Number three, Smoke One for me, our buddy Jim up in Canada. Number four, Speed Demon 16. And number five, Daytona Cementheads. None of us yet are in the top five. I'm expecting that to change, Sidekick. You better get something going with that fantasy team.
Hey.
Go for it.
I got both my teams in the top 20, I think, now. So,
that's true.
Real quick. So we're going to go number four, Kevin Harvick. Number 78, Martin Truex Jr., the only Toyota that's going to do anything this week. The number two on the pole, Brad Keselowski. The number four of Landon Castle. The number 32 of Matt D. Benedetto. I'm going with winner number two and manufacturer Ford. My Eat My Dust pick is the number two, Brad Keselowski.
I'm just writing it down. All right. Now, in our little challenge, our Eat My Dust challenge, NASCAR John leads all at 72. Sidekick, you're coming in at number two with 70. Brandon is number three at 55. Loyal listener Liz coming in number four at 45. I'm fifth with 44. And our buddy Christian at the Motorsports News Source coming in sixth at 37 points. You are going with Brad Keselowski. NASCAR John is going with Martin Truex Jr. Brandon, what say you?
Well, I'm going same church, different pew as Sidekick. I'm going with that Ryan Blaney. Going to go on a little long shot here for a first-time win. I just like what I see out
Dude,
of this.
He looked good this weekend.
I like what I see out of what they've been doing all year. The Fords are on a roll. You know, he's in basically the same cars as Keselowski. He's on the pole. Ryan Blaney's third. I think he's going to be up there. So that's where I'm going.
He has looked good, in my opinion, the whole season.
Yeah.
Loyal listener Liz is going with Martin Truex Jr. as well. I am going to go. I'm not shaking at all. I'm going with Matt Kenseth. I'm sticking with my JGRs. They're going to come out of the funk. Going with Matt Kenseth. Christian is going with a Ford. Logano. All right, there you have it. Those are our
picks. We got all of them.
He did win
racing.
Xfinity.
I'm sorry, what was that?
He won Xfinity.
Yes, he did. Brandon, I didn't catch you. You said
we now got all of Penske Racing and Eat My Dust.
That's true.
Between Sidekick, myself, and Christian, you got all three of them.
Yep. Yep. All right, there you go. That's our program for today. Many thanks to everybody that's been listening in. Didn't even get to all the topics, but that's all right. We'll talk about quiet cars next week. Reminders for you, please be here with us on Thursday night for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, coming to you live at 7 p.m. Eastern time. All right. That'll be on Thursday night. And then next Saturday afternoon, I'll be back here with you at 2 p.m. Eastern time for another relaxed Frat House Saturday. All right. That's it for today. In the meantime, boogity, 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 boys. Get out there and enjoy your race and catch it at 3:30 this afternoon Eastern time, coming to you from Las Vegas. Enjoy.